Well, I do have some slides and I do have some pictures, but we'll have to wait. America, of course, has been celebrating Thanksgiving for, you got something there. Celebrating Thanksgiving in one form or another for almost 400 years. We've been blessed as a nation, and we know it. Our nation knows it, and at least we used to know it, and we realize why we're blessed. And so presidents over the years, and even before there were, you know, we had presidents, but starting with George Washington, and I imagine pretty much every president since then, has had a proclamation to remind us or encourage us to give thanks to the God that's responsible for the good things that we have. And you could say, well, yeah, we live in America. It should be easy to be thankful here, right? Look at all the stuff we have. Look at the Thanksgiving meal. Look at all the food we have. Too much food for Thanksgiving, right? And then after that, well, not only that, we have peace. This was mentioned in the opening prayer, I believe. We have peace. We have not. You know, we can assemble and not have to be too worried about our own safety. We've just been so blessed. We have family around. Our surroundings are good, and you could say, well, it should be easy to be thankful in America, shouldn't it? And then after that, we've got Black Friday, and we've got Cyber Monday, and we've got who knows whatever other days where people are going to fight over consumer goods that are more prevalent, more available in our country than anywhere else in the world. Why shouldn't we be thankful? Being thankful could be automatic. I had a picture of my granddaughter who's here, you know, with the red hair there. She's just learned to say thank you. And she does it automatically. Every time you hand her something. Thank you, Grandpa. Thank you, Nana. Thank you, Mommy. Thank you. Thank you, Evie. Thank you, thank you, thank you. She says thank you all the time. It's become automatic. And being thankful, in her case, should be fairly easy because she gets a lot of things handed to her in her life. And it's pleasant. We enjoy seeing it. It's kind of fun. And it's even sincere for her. And it's a habit. You can just go ahead and turn it off. Sorry. What's all that work for some other time? You got to hit it again. But as Christians, we learn that it's not just saying thank you every time somebody hands you something good. We learn that, you know, we have to be thankful. And being thankful and having an attitude of gratitude, as it said, is something expected of us at all times. We learn that we need to be content with our circumstances. We learn that no matter how much we have or how little we have, we need to be content. And this is a little bit more difficult. But we're making progress. We learn that Thanksgiving is not just a day, but really it's a state of mind. And we get better at it. We start working at it. And we don't have to be maybe like my granddaughter, who when she doesn't get her way, doesn't say thank you, Grandpa. She acts out in other ways. And we learn, as Christians, not to do the stomp and the grunt and the growl and all the other things that two-year-olds do. But then, if you turn to James chapter 5 and verse, I'm sorry, James chapter 1 and verse 2, here's James writing to the 12 tribes scattered abroad, he says. James, a servant of God. And then in verse 2, he says, my brethren, count it all joy when you fall into different temptations. Count it all joy? Okay, now we're okay with, all right, I don't have to only be thankful when I have lots of good things, but I can be thankful in whatever my circumstances are. But now, even when things are really bad, I'm supposed to count it all joy? Are the people that prayed about just a few minutes ago, are they supposed to count it all joy that they're suffering? How does that work? How can you consider a trial to be an occasion for joy? How can I consider that? How can we get our minds around that? And what's God doing? What in the world is he doing? What's he trying to accomplish? What is he accomplishing? What's his purpose? Why is it good to be thankful even when things aren't going our way? What is God doing? How might we view trials in such a way that would help us to count them as positive? Well, let's explore that subject today. I'm going to try to do it without my glasses for a while. And yes, this is a time to focus on Thanksgiving, but all too often, our thanks is like that of my 2-year-old granddaughter. It's kind of only when things that we like come along, things that we want to have. And all too often, our response to the negative things in our life is a little bit like her response to the negative things in her life. And we have a little stomp party, and we grunt and run around or do whatever else she does. Because why? Because we're human. And all too often, our response to the negative things isn't a positive response. So today, let's see how it is that we can do better, why we can focus on the good side of the bad things. Now, first of all, I need to point out that I'm not an expert here. I just happen to have my name's on the schedule. I don't claim to be the expert. We have people, some of you sitting out there know a lot more about this and experience a lot more than I have, and I recognize that. So I'm not teaching in the position of an expert. I'm just teaching in a position of one who is going to read the scriptures to you. Thanksgiving is not just a learned response to something. It's not just an automatic reaction to when something good happens, but it's a state of mind. And we understand that intellectually. It's a state of mind. It's a perspective. It's a way of looking at things. Because, and you may have seen this. I'm going to go ahead and wear the glasses. You may have seen this on the internet. There's a little saying. It says, it's easy to be thankful for the good things. A rich life of fulfillment comes to those who are thankful for the setbacks. Gratitude can turn a negative into a positive. Find a way to be thankful for your troubles, and they can become your blessings. Oh. You might have seen that. I've seen it. Gratitude is a state of mind. Thanksgiving is a state of mind. Is it your state of mind? Is it my state of mind? Well, again, I'm not claiming to be the expert, but I have some friends, some of you here, and I'm not going to use anybody here as an example, but some of you here are experts in the field, and you're good resources for the rest of us. But I have some other friends that are experts in the field. I have a little friend. She's about 4 years old, name's Olivia. She's in the middle of devastating chemo treatment. She's taking drugs, as some here are, drugs that can kill her. And sometimes, just a couple of weeks ago, she took a drug to try to battle this leukemia. That the way it was given and so forth, it was probably going to kill her, and they have to real quickly get it out of her body as quickly as they start the infusion. The thing, they got to stop it. It's a horrible thing. These are drugs that can kill her, but untreated leukemia is 100% fatal. That's the reason my hair is different. If you've seen me before, at least I had a little bit of hair. It's cut, it's growing back, but we cut my hair because she finally lost her hair in the most recent round of her treatment. And so I cut my hair to a little bit of support for her. But you know what? This little girl's wholly positive. She's it's hard to describe. She's just got a positive point of view. And yes, she hurts, and she's not happy when she's hurting. But when she's not hurting, she's wonderful. It's an amazing thing. Her parents focus on the positive and being supportive. She's still got a year and a half worth of treatments left. She just went through a really bad round of it here in the last couple of weeks. She's an expert. It's one of my friends. I have another friend. He's not 4. He's about 70 or so. He's extremely positive. Extremely helpful. Helps all kinds of people. In fact, his job is all about helping people. He still works. Could retire, but he works. He loves to encourage people. He loves to make corny jokes, the kind of jokes that make you go, aw. You know, the more uncomfortable you feel after his joke, the happier he is. He makes those puns that make you give you the same reaction. He's an avid minor league baseball fan. He's a history buff. He's a radio hobbyist. He likes to tune in stations from far away, regular AM band stations, and see where he can get them from. He's run a marathon as a younger man. He doesn't run them anymore, of course. And I've done some work for him, and his wife says, oh, that's Tom. Tom's calling. And he says he calls me every lunchtime. He tells me, I've got the best lunch that I've ever had today. Now, she's exaggerating a little bit, but the point is, she says, he calls every day as if he's got the best lunch that's ever been made for anybody. Praises me about my lunch that I fixed for him. This is a guy, he's just so positive. So positive. And he has reasons not to be, and I'll share that with you later. And in the Bible, we've got a guy that we don't know a whole lot about, because he's only basically mentioned one, in a book, but the book bears his name. It's the book of Job. And here we've got a very, very righteous man. He's righteous at the beginning of the book. God calls him righteous at the end of the book. He's a friend of God. He's helper of the downtrodden. He's rich. He's blessed. He's generous with what God's given him. He's respected by everyone. He came into some tough times, though, as we know the story, through no fault of his own. He hadn't done anything to deserve it, and spent a whole book trying to convince his friends who were saying, "Nah, you must have deserved it, Job." And Job says, "No, I didn't. I didn't do anything. I didn't do anything to deserve this. I didn't do something wrong that caused this treatment." And he was frustrated about it, and he expressed his frustration, as some of you have in your trials, as Olivia's parents have in their trials, as I'm sure Tom has at times, even though he's so very positive. Job expressed his frustration, but he remained faithful in spite of those frustrations. And as we go through the sermon, I'm going to revisit these three individuals just to make it a little bit more real, I guess. Would have been a little bit more real if you could have seen their pictures. I got a picture of Job. Somebody painted it. I don't guess we know what he looked like. But I want to tell you about a big picture before we get into the details, because we need to read and heed the entire Bible. I've made that point many times, those of you that have heard me speak over the years. If we just read Deuteronomy alone, where it says, if you obey God, things are going to go well, and if you don't, you're going to have curses. And if that was the whole Bible, maybe we'd have a right to think everything should always be peaches and cream as long as we're obedient. But the Bible doesn't give that message consistently all throughout. We know from our own life's experiences, we know from the experiences of others, and we know from the rest of the Bible that that rosy point of view is not true. It's not the way it really works. We have the book of Psalms, which has all kinds of things, the frustrations of the different writers of the Psalms. We have the wisdom books, including the book of Job, that show that this isn't God's world, and that it's not as simple as do good things and good things happen and do bad things and bad things happen. It's just not that simple. We wish it was, but it's not. So we need the complete picture. Sometimes in this world, the righteous prosper, the wicked prosper and the righteous suffer. If you turn to John chapter 9, please. John chapter 9. I'm going to talk about Thanksgiving, but I'm going to talk about being thankful for the things that we kind of really naturally don't want to be thankful for. And why should we be? John chapter 9, Jesus passed and saw a man blind from his birth, and his disciples said, "Well, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" Jesus had a lot of people in his life, including those he was teaching, who had the mentality, as we tend to have as human beings, maybe we tend to have in our own culture, that if somebody's got a problem, physical problem like that, they must have a spiritual reason why they have a physical problem. They must have sinned. Jesus was dealing with that all the time. But Jesus disagreed. He said, "Neither has this man sinned or his parents, but that the works of God should be made manifest in him." I didn't mention to you Tom, the real positive guy who calls his wife every day at 70, tells her what a great lunch it is. He's blind. He's been blind since he was born. Why was he born blind? Because of his sins, his parents' sins? Jesus said, it could be for the glory of God. You can't pin it down like that. In Luke, in chapter 13, Luke chapter 13, the first few verses, there were some, wherever Jesus was at the time, that told him about these Galileans. Jesus was from Galilee, whose blood Pilate mingled with their sacrifices. Pilate had murdered some Jews. And Jesus answered and said, "Do you suppose that these Galileans were sinners above all Galileans because they suffered some things? I tell you, verse 3, unless you repent, you will likewise perish. Or those 18 upon whom the Tower of Siloam fell and slew them, do you think that they were sinners above all men that dwell in Jerusalem? I say no, but except you repent, you all likewise perish." Jesus saying, we don't know why bad things happen to people that, we could say, quote unquote, don't deserve it. Why does Olivia have leukemia? You know what? Nobody knows. We don't know why people get leukemia. All the medical science, we've discovered all kinds of things, still don't know why people get leukemia. What, you know, is it passed on? Is it, you know, is it environmental? We don't know. We don't know. Why does one person get it? Why does Olivia have it and not somebody else? How about Job? Job spent, you know, the greater part of 40 chapters explaining, I haven't done anything to deserve this. Didn't change where he was, though, did it? The fact of the matter is a lot of times there's no physical, no good physical reason for why what happens to us. Whether the tower falls, you know, there's a wreck, there's some kind of an accident like that, some kind of a sickness. It can be any number of things. So I think, and I think we all understand this, that we need to rid ourselves of perhaps some simplistic notions that if we would only do the right things, if we would only check the right boxes, and only avoid the things that are over here, that everything would just be just fine. We wouldn't need to suffer. That's not the message of the Bible. Philippians chapter 1 and verse 29. You get into the New Testament, it's clear. Over and over again, the writers of the New Testament talk about suffering. That's not a pleasant thing. We don't like to talk about it. We don't like to think about it. Philippians 1, verse 29, it says, for unto you it is given in the behalf of Christ not only to believe on him, but also to suffer for his sake. Paul's writing to the Philippians that, you know what? Part of the calling is that you're going to have to suffer. Now, we don't like to hear that. Not if we're normal. Oh, yeah, I'd love to suffer. No, we don't love to suffer. And I'm not suggesting that that's what the sermon's about. Count it all. Consider it all joy. It doesn't say it is joyful. Just consider, and you can look that up, and that's really what it means. It means to deem it that way, to classify it or define it. But we understand that it's not really a joy in the sense that we really enjoy this. We love it. Now, 1 Peter chapter 2. You're familiar with this. Don't need to turn there. 1 Peter chapter 2. I'm going to come back to verse 20 later, but verse 21 says, for even hereunto were you called, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example that you should follow in his steps. Follow his steps. Follow his steps what? Well, we follow his steps in every way that happens to include suffering. He did no sin, no guile found in his mouth. We're to follow his example there too. There are other scriptures could have turned to. I had them on the PowerPoint. And you know, Paul talks about all the suffering that he went through in 1 Corinthians 11. I don't know that I remember all the rest of them that were on there. But suffering is part of the Christian life. We understand that. If we're Christians, we can expect to suffer. Those of us in this room and in this country, maybe not as much as some of the people in other countries, they're losing their lives because they're Christians. That's terrible. But it was predicted, unfortunately. I mean, that's just the way it is. What's God's purpose in this? How does he turn it out for good? I asked Josh, and I guess somebody else has had it. There's a poem I'm going to pass out. The poem is what I'm going to use for the structure to the sermon. I actually had the sermon all planned out before I even discovered the poem. But then I read the poem and noticed that it had 7 points in the poem. So that's obviously from God. It's got 7 points. So I'll go ahead and use it. I'm being facetious. I'll read it while it's getting handed out. Actually, it's a poem that contains the saying that I already read. The poem's called Be Thankful. Be thankful that you don't already know, have everything that you desire, because if you did, what would there be to look forward to? Be thankful when you don't know something, for it gives you the opportunity to learn. Be thankful for the difficult times. During those times, you grow. Be thankful for your limitations, because they give you opportunities for improvement. Be thankful for each new challenge, because it will build your strength and character. Be thankful for your mistakes. They will teach you valuable lessons. Be thankful when you're tired and weary, because it means you've made a difference. It's easy to be thankful for the good things. A life of rich fulfillment comes to those who are also thankful for the setbacks. Gratitude can turn a negative into a positive. Find a way to be thankful for your troubles and they can become your blessings. I've put a lot of white space on that particular paper. If you'd like to take notes on it, feel free. It's yours. The first point, be thankful that you don't already have everything you desire. If you did, what would there be to look forward to? What do you look forward to that you don't have? Anybody? Anybody want to volunteer? Just shout it out. What do you look forward to that you don't have yet?
Eternal life.
Some of us may have not have this, some of the. How about health? We want good health if we don't have good health. Or peace. Peace in our own minds. For some of us, peace in the world. Freedom for those that don't have freedom. There's all kinds of things we don't have now. And Paul talked about that in Romans chapter 8. We could read the whole book, but even the whole chapter. I'm going to try to limit myself. But Romans chapter 8 in verse 15, it says, "You've not received the spirit of bondage again to fear," Romans 8:15, "but received the spirit of adoption, whereby we cry, Abba, Father. The Spirit itself bears witness with our spirit that we are the children of God, and if children, then heirs. Heirs of God and joint heirs with Christ. If so be that we suffer with him, that we may also be glorified together." There you go. Suffering is part of the experience. But then Paul says, "I reckon that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory that will be revealed in us. For the earnest expectation of the creature waits for the manifestation of the sons of God. For the creation was made subject to vanity, not willingly, but by reason of him who subjected it." We've been made in, we've been made in the way we have by God for a reason. Why? Because we don't have those things we long for. He made us that way on purpose, subject to sin. It says, "Because the creature or the creation will also be delivered from the bondage of corruption into the glorious liberty of the children of God. And the whole creation groans and travails." In verse 23, "Not only that, the creation, but ourselves, which have the first fruits of the Spirit. We groan within ourselves, waiting for the redemption of our body," the eternal life that Jim talked about. "For we are saved by hope, but the hope that is seen is not hope. For what a man sees, why does he yet hope for it?" That's the point of the first verse on the poem here. If we don't have everything, we hope for some of the things. Verse 25 says, "For if we hope what we don't see, then we do with patience wait for it." God hasn't given us everything. There's something in the future he wants us to long for. Most of you heard me say this or heard Jim say it in a sermon years ago. For those who haven't, I just want to point out that the word hope today has a different meaning than it did when the King James was translated. It has a different meaning than the Greek word translated hope in the New Testament here. The hope in the Bible is something that's sure. It's a sure thing. It's just not here yet. It doesn't mean I hope I'm going to win the lottery. Hope is something that's sure and not here yet. So we hope for these things, but they're sure. They're coming. You know, Olivia looks forward to the time when she doesn't have to go to these chemo treatments 2, 3, 4 times a week and have something go in her, you know, poured into her port that's going to make her sick. One of our brothers sitting here right here now that has been through that many times. And you take something, you know it's going to make you feel terrible. My friend Tom looks forward to the time he's going to be able to see. Job, he looked forward to the time, it says, when God would have a desire to the works of his hands. You know, the suffering that he was experiencing would be over. Now, were they thankful? Was he thankful? I think Job was. He didn't understand. He was frustrated. He didn't get it all. But he knew that God wouldn't abandon him. He was faithful through that. That's part of what we learn. So we don't have everything now, but that gives us the opportunity to hope and look forward to the future. The second stanza of that poem says, "Be thankful when you don't know something, for it gives you the opportunity to learn." Not knowing something gives you the opportunity to learn. Now, that's something I don't think about that much. I love to learn. I get frustrated when I can't figure something out and don't understand it. But I didn't think about being thankful for not knowing something because it gives me the opportunity to learn. But you know what? There's something to that. Olivia's parents, for what it's worth, are extremely fastidious about health issues. How's that go, you know? Their child happens to be the one that gets leukemia. They are more careful than probably anybody in this room, or at least on a par with anybody in this room. Their child gets the life-threatening disease. So much for knowing what to do or what you think you know. Point is, we don't know. Someday we'll understand. Job, in fact, in chapter 12 of Job, interesting statement here. Job, of course, had his friends that came and tried to help him, tried to point out where, they didn't know where he had made a mistake, but they figured he must have made a mistake somewhere, so they took lots of guesses. And Job was, he's kind of fed up with this approach. In chapter 12, verse 1 and 2, he said, you know, no doubt you are the people and wisdom will die with you. You know, you are the know-it-alls. Glad you came to straighten me out. You know it all. Of course, he's being sarcastic. They didn't know it all. And you know what? If you know everything, you can't learn. And we know that up here. But it's harder maybe on a day-by-day basis to deal with that, to realize that actually not knowing something can be a blessing sometimes. I think as we get older, we learn that. Sometimes it's good. Like, isn't there a scripture that talks about don't listen too carefully, you'll hear your servant condemning you or something, criticizing you. In chapter 23 of Job, and I didn't write down which verses, I could read the whole thing, but Job in verse 2, he says, my complaint is bitter, my stroke is heavier than my groaning. Oh, that I knew where I might find him, that I could come even to his seat. You know, he's getting very frustrated. He wants to have a one-on-one with God. He wants to sit down and just have it out and get some answers. God doesn't say he's sinning in all this, by the way. It says Job didn't sin with his lips, and it's never took that back. But notice, as frustrated as Job was, notice some other things here. And I'm going to skip over some verses. I go forward, but he's not there. Backward, verse 8. I can't perceive him. You know, I want to deal directly with him. And of course, well, it gets ahead of the story here, but he does end up getting to deal directly with him. Eventually he will. On the left hand, where he works, I can't behold him. He hides himself on the right hand. You know, I can't get my finger on him. But, verse 10, he knows the way that I take, and when he has tried me, I shall come forth as gold. Job, in spite of his frustrations, knows that God loves him, and that when God is through with him, he'll be as good as gold. And that's amazing. And that's, I think, you know, this type of attitude that you see throughout the book. Yes, he gets frustrated. Yes, he kind of vents a bit, and God has to, you know, deal with that later. But in the end, it says Job, you know, Job was righteous. God calls him righteous. The beginning and the end of the book. Job remained confident in God, even though he didn't know. And I don't think he understood, at least not from the way it's worded in the book here, I don't think he understood that this was an opportunity for him to learn, but it was. It was, and we have the benefit of hindsight, and we can look back. And we can realize, if we look at that and think about how it works, that you and I have the opportunity to learn. We go through frustrating times. We go through difficult trials. And we don't know what we're going to learn. We'd like to know ahead of time, so maybe we can learn and get the trial out of the way. It doesn't work that way, does it? The trial goes on and on sometimes. But God has something he's teaching us. There's some things he's teaching us. And that's a blessing. That's a blessing. And it's something we can be thankful for, that God knows what we need. God knows how to fashion us as that master potter, if I can use another analogy. And we can have the confidence that Job had, that when God's done, we'll be as good as gold. That helps us to be thankful for it, doesn't it? You know, you can be thankful for an opportunity to learn if you keep in mind that as a result of that opportunity to learn, you'll be as good as gold when it's over. The third verse, stanza of the poem, says, be thankful for the difficult times. During those times you grow. Some of these verses may bleed onto each other a little bit. Difficult times lead to growth. Now, instinctively, we know that's true. John 15, verses 1 and 2. You know that. It talks about pruning, right? Pruning is something that we would, by analogy, guess would be unpleasant. If you were, you know, if a plant was sensate, it would not like being pruned. But we as humans, we can look at that and say, ah, that's what makes things grow. Every branch in verse 2, John 15, in me that bears fruit, doesn't bear fruit, he takes away. And every branch that bears fruit, he purges or prunes it that it might bring forth more fruit. And if you've ever worked with fruit trees, I live around fruit trees. And this summer I had the pleasure of working on a winery and had a job at a winery and had lots of long discussions with the vintner there. About how he pruned and how he took care of his plants and so forth. And there's a real science to it and an art. It's both. It's a mixture. And it was interesting to learn about. But the fact is, to get the good fruit and to get enough of it, it takes pruning. And that's unpleasant. Okay, if it's you and me and we're being pruned, that sounds pretty unpleasant to me anyway. And in chapter 16, if you happen to turn there, in chapter 16 of John, in verse 21... he's talking about the fact that he would be away from his disciples and then see them again later. But he makes a point that I can perhaps take out of context a little bit. He says, a woman, when she is in travail and labor, has sorrow because her hour has come, but as soon as she's delivered of the child, she remembers no more the anguish for joy that a man is born into the world. And I have to take that, I have to talk to some of you women. Is that absolutely true? The ones that I've dealt with, they don't seem to complain about it too much afterwards. So there's a principle there. In other words, it's very unpleasant for the time being, but there can be growth. And through that growth, good things can happen. And so we understand that difficulties are something that produce good fruit. Now the question is, can we be positive? Can we be thankful for those difficulties? I know my friend Tom is exceptionally caring and loving of people with handicaps. He understands where they're coming from. And his job, his particular job, is to help them. That's what he does for a living. And you can tell he cares. And his wife actually, due to budget cuts and whatever, she hauls him around the state of Maryland in his car, in their car. And they get some mileage for it and whatever. But he wouldn't think of not making those trips just because the state cut back and they can't have a car and whatever. He makes those trips. His wife takes him along, takes him. She doesn't get paid for it. They just get gas. But that's the way Tom is. Olivia and her parents, specifically her parents, are growing in ways that they would have never dreamed of and they would have never asked for. But I happen to be blessed to be in the area where her father was on the Feast of Trumpets, and he gave just a phenomenal sermon. And that sermon was informed by his experience discovering that his child had leukemia. And then what they've tried to do about it and all the rocky road that's been. And his description of, he didn't call it this, but I'll call it the now and the not yet. You know, the kingdom's here, but it's not, and how we look forward to it. It was extremely convincing to me because it was real. He was real. He was a lot more real than he would have been a year ago or 6 months ago when his daughter's treatment started. So we have opportunities to grow through difficult times. We don't like it, but that's the way it is. We do grow. The fourth stanza says, be thankful for your limitations because they give opportunities for improvement. Your limitations. That could be pretty obvious right away. You think, well, Tom, he's got a limitation. He can't see. Never been able to see. Is he thankful for that? It gives him opportunities for improvement. He's very sensitive to other things. One thing about Tom, if you're ever around him for very long, he notices things that you and I don't notice. Now, whatever, maybe that's true about blind people in general, I don't know. But he's very sensitive to what he hears, to even like moods and things. He can kind of tell because the other senses are sharpened a bit. So this is similar to the third stanza, but what kind of physical, we have physical limitations. We have limitations just because we're physical. In 1 Corinthians chapter 13 and verse 12, talks about limitation we have. 1 Corinthians 13 and verse 12. For now we see through a glass darkly, but then face to face. Now I know in part, then I will be known, I shall know even as I am known. And we can't quite see now. We're looking in a mirror that's kind of foggy. We don't get a good picture. But suffering, bad experiences, helplessness, that feeling of helplessness, like I don't know what I can do. Like, you know, all I can do is trust in God. Those are things that help us see more clearly. No, we don't like that. We wouldn't choose that. But that's the way it works. You know this. I'm preaching to the choir here, right? You've been in those situations where you just don't know how you're going to get out. How am I going to be delivered from this? And then God does it. And through that, you realize you've grown there. In Job 42 and verse 5, and again, you know that verse. I'll read it so that I don't quote it inaccurately, but you don't need to turn there. Job 42 and verse 5. Job says in the end here, he says, I've heard of you by the hearing of the ear, but now my eye sees you. You know, I was seeing in this mirror a little bit foggily, and I couldn't see you clearly. But now I can see you. And I think Job might have been even a little bit hard on himself. He says, because he's saying, I've heard about you, but now I see you. Well, I think Job more than heard about God, and he had a relationship with God. He was righteous. But he realizes it was nothing compared to what it needed to be. And he had a much clearer picture of God at the end of the book than he did at the beginning of the book. And what did it take to get there? It took suffering. It took suffering. He wouldn't have learned it if his life had continued to be smooth. And then, in a truly amazing verse that I've turned to before in sermons, Hebrews chapter 5. We think, Jesus is our example in all things, okay? We know that. Hebrews chapter 5, verse 7 and 8. We would think, here's an example of something, an area where Jesus would not need to be our example. Because of his own, because he couldn't, but that's not what it says. Hebrews chapter 5, verse 7. Talking about Jesus, the priest ever after the order of Melchizedek, who in the days of his flesh, when he had offered up prayers and supplications with strong crying and tears unto him that was able to save him from death and was heard in that he feared, though he were a son, yet learned he obedience by the things which he suffered. How did Jesus have to learn obedience? Well, I don't have a good answer for that. You know, a guy that's up here is supposed to have all the answers. I don't have an answer for that one. But I have some hints. I've been thinking about it for a long time. And this poem has an interesting verse. It says, be thankful for your limitations because they give you opportunities for improvement. Is it possible? I think it is. That even Jesus, you think, well, what did he have to learn? Well, in one sense, you could think maybe nothing. But in another sense, when he lived amongst us, he took on himself certain limitations, didn't he? He was limited. Now, I don't understand that totally. Maybe you do, maybe you don't. But it's clear from Scripture that he took on certain limitations. And because of those limitations, he grew. There was opportunity for improvement. He learned through the things that he suffered. Now, that's amazing, but it's there. You know, Olivia has serious limitations now. Some of you that are sick have serious limitations. But we look forward to the time when you won't have those limitations. There's room for improvement. Okay, the next stanza. Be thankful for each new challenge because it will build your strength and character. In Hebrews, while we're here, chapter 2 and verse 18, it says, talking about Jesus again, Hebrews 2:18, for in that he himself has suffered being tempted, he is able to succor or help them that are being tempted. Jesus was actually perfected in a way, if you want to put it that way. He learned something through suffering himself that he couldn't have learned otherwise. And he's able to comfort in a way that he wasn't perhaps capable of before. Now, again, I don't understand that. I'm just reading what it says here. You can benefit from challenges in your life. You know, my friend Tom, who can't see. I've got a brother-in-law who's blind in one eye and can't see out the other, literally. His one eye is glass. He's legally blind in the other one. So what's he do with his life? Does he sit around and mope? No, he runs marathons. He rides bicycle all over the world. Well, sorry, all over our part of the world. All over the place. Today he's hiking somewhere. Goes to college. Mentors people when he has opportunity. He builds character instead of wallowing in self-pity. Got another blind friend. And I hadn't seen him for years. Got to see him at the feast. You know, we wonder, what can we do? What can we do to help preach the gospel? Well, my blind friend Lewis is preaching the gospel on TV in D.C., Washington, D.C. He's on television down there. And he was asking me, we were talking, I saw him just a couple weeks ago again, and he's asking me for advice on how he comes across in his talking. I'm like, who am I? You know, but how do I come across here? You know, but he wanted to know because he wants to learn. He wants to do better. He realizes his limitations. He's got challenges, but he's building character. 1 Peter chapter 5. This is an interesting verse here. 1 Peter chapter 5, one of the verses. They're all interesting, but I mean one in particular. Verse 9. But verse 6, 1 Peter 5. Humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time, casting all your cares upon him, because he cares for you. Be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, as a roaring lion, walks about seeking whom he may devour. Verse 9 says, whom resist steadfast in the faith. Excuse me. And here's what I think is interesting. He says, knowing that the same afflictions are accomplished in your brethren that are in the world. Well, we suffer. People that are not Christian, they suffer too. Sometimes we suffer the same things. We're not immune to whatever they're suffering from. They're not immune to what we're suffering from. Although they may not suffer for being a Christian, but some of the other things, we all suffer the same things. Leukemia is not discriminatory as to what your religion is, whether or not you're going to get it. Neither are the other diseases, of course. Verse 10, but the God of all grace, who has called you into his eternal glory by Jesus Christ Jesus, after that you have suffered a while, make you perfect, establish, strengthen, and settle you. So, it's not like, I read the story and get the point, you won't have to suffer. That's not what it says. We'd like it to be that way. That's kind of the way I was as a young person. I thought, well, I can learn the easy way or I can learn the hard way. I'll try to learn the easy way. I'll try to follow good examples. And there's something to be said for that. But the bottom line is, you know, we have to suffer. We just have to. Because there's some things we're not going to learn any other way. And here Peter says, you know, after you've suffered a while, then God's going to make you perfect or complete and established and strengthened. Excuse me. You're going to become more mature and established and sure of what you know. Job had always been righteous. He wasn't like more righteous when it was over. He was righteous before. He was righteous after. But what was he afterwards? He was mature. He had learned a lot. And he was complete in ways that he hadn't been before. The sixth stanza, I'm going to kind of skip. Be thankful for your mistakes. They will teach you valuable lessons. You know, 1 Peter 2:20 that I didn't read before says, you know, if you suffer for doing something wrong, so what? You know, you should expect that. It doesn't have to do that. That particular stanza doesn't have a lot to do with today's sermon, so I'm going to skip over it. You know, maybe you deserve a trial. Don't fall into the trap of, which is easy to do as a Christian. I've had friends in the past or relatives that say, you know, they do stupid stuff and they want to blame God. Oh, you know, it's just the life of a Christian. Well, yeah, but you know, you stuck your foot in the lawnmower. You know, whatever. I'm making up something there. But you know, we can blame God and blame Christianity for our problems when we just did something stupid. And Yet we can be, I don't know that we want to be thankful for our mistakes, but we can learn, certainly learn from them. Please do learn from your mistakes. Finally, the last stanza there, the last one of the be thankfuls. Be thankful when you're tired and weary because it means you've made a difference. In Psalm 44 and verse 22, it says, we die daily for God. You know, we're like sheep counted for slaughter. Romans 12 verse 1, we're a living sacrifice. We're sacrificed every day. 2 Corinthians 11 that I mentioned before, where Paul suffered continually in his efforts to preach the gospel. Hebrews 2 verse 18, we already read. You know, Jesus suffered and now he can help others. Jesus became weary often, and it's recorded in the Gospels. He became weary because he was doing good. Yeah, he wore himself out helping people. Job, in the end of the book of Job, says he lived longer, had more blessings, and he was able to help and be a blessing to others for more years in his life. My other friends, Olivia and Tom, you know, they continue to make a difference in their worlds. And, you know, one thing that Olivia's parents have shared with us is the world that they are now exposed to that they weren't before, and that's the world, I mean, they go to these clinics, and everybody that goes to those clinics has cancer, or maybe everybody has leukemia or whatever. You know, some of them don't make it. And you're there. You can be an encouragement. It's hard. It's hard. I know Olivia and her parents are very weary. Some of you sitting in this room because of your sickness, because of other issues and trials, are very weary. But you're doing good. You're doing well. You're helping others, and your example is there. And you're making a difference, and you're going to continue to make a difference. And not only that, there's a future to look forward to. As Jesus, you know, Jesus looked forward to his resurrection and to the future, where he was going to be able to help people in a different way that he wasn't as just having a few disciples. We could help, you know, thousands, millions, whatever it might be. He's going to, his future, he's going to have a lot more impact than he did as a human being. And he looked forward to that. And I'm sure from what we read in the Bible that he appreciated what he was able to go through in the sense that it didn't make him complete in some ways that maybe he didn't even understand that he needed to do. I don't know. I don't know what he understood and what he didn't. But the point is he was made more complete because of what he went through. He understood things that he didn't quite understand before. He saw things from a different perspective. Maybe you say, you know, he went from having one perspective to learning our perspective a little better. We have to go the other direction, don't we? We have to get God's perspective. And that's what we need in order to be thankful for bad things when bad things happen. Well, you know, we don't want to be thankful for that. That's not our natural desire. But that's having God's perspective, where we realize that God is involved in it. His hand is active in our lives, in every step of our lives. And therefore, we can be confident in that and can be thankful that God is directing our steps. So as we focus on thankfulness at this time of year, obviously we're going to remember to be thankful for the things that someone hands us, just as my granddaughter is. Thank you, Grandpa. Thank you, Nana. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. This year, let's think also, maybe more than you have before, on being thankful for all that God does in your life. Sometimes things that you would, you know, physically, humanly speaking, would rather him not do in your life. But realize that all that unpleasant stuff is for our own good as well. It's all designed for our own good. Job, at the beginning of the story, says when his wife is trying to talk to him, and it's, you know, just curse God and die. He says, come on, woman, that's silly. We're not going to do that. He said in verse 10 of Job chapter 2, he says, what, shall we receive good at the hand of God, and shall we not receive evil? In all this, Job did not sin with his lips. God's in it all, from beginning to end. And he will see to it that it turns out for your good and the good of others, even if that doesn't look too likely from your human perspective or my human perspective. So as you think about this, I'm going to bring the computer back up here and play a song that you were going to be able to see the lyrics on the screen. Now you can't. It's a song that, if I can get the screen to come up. expresses very well the thoughts in the sermon. It's by Laura Story. You may know it. All right, speaker. By Laura Story, and it's called Blessings.
What if